from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're video streaming and broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. Today, no guest, because we have so much to share, and we're going to do more of our talk back where you'll have an opportunity to call in and share your comments and points of view. Today, we're going to explore the latest on health and healing. If you're depressed, good information to help you. If you want to kill some cancer cells, well, got some new information on that as well. And also, what causes a lot of our chronic viral infections? I'll give you insights on that as well. And if you're a woman and you'd like to improve your cognitive performance, one nutrient stands out. On our environmental segment today, we're going to look at what's happened to so many people down in the Gulf of Mexico area. Now, that would be Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas, and Florida. My own research has shown that tens of thousands have been adversely affected. The trouble is, it's not in a news cycle. No one's paying attention. But Ricky Ott has written an article that I'll share with you called Unfinished Business, The Unspoken Link Between Disbursements and Sick Children in the Gulf of Mexico. Really good piece of what we're not told that we should know about, because otherwise, how can we help these people? Also, from our environmental segment, this is the latest. The carbon pollution is up to 2 million pounds per second. That's 2 million pounds every second. And the final results are that no governments are going to do anything. China, Brazil, India, United States, United Kingdom, they're not going to stop their pollution. They're not going to stop their factories. So what can we do? Well, we can realize that we're in for some really hot, frighteningly hot days ahead. This is, quote, inevitable, according to the latest research on this. Also, plastic. Guess where you have the most plastic pollution in the world? The highest concentration. I'd like to see if anyone in the audience knows. If you know the answer, where is the greatest amount of plastic pollution concentrated? Call us at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Also, there's a high probability that the governor and the politicians in New York State are going to allow gas hydrofracking in one more effort to educate the public, to influence the governor. And we've sent this report to the governor from Allison Rose Levy from Alternet, the top fracking threats to health that New York must assess. And I'll go over those with you. Needless to say, we have a lot to share today. Let's begin. We always begin with the latest on health and healing. First up, we have a lot of Americans who are going through depression for a lot of different reasons. But unfortunately, more often than not, they're dealing with it in inappropriate manners. I just counseled a woman whose husband is using Zoloft and Prozac and one other drug. He's a lawyer. He's having some crisis in his life, can't cope, so the pills are allowing him to cope. When I asked the wife, are you aware of the side effects? No. And then when I went over the side effects, she was surprised. Her psychiatrist never told her about the side effects, including suicidal ideation. So what if you are depressed and you don't want to go the route of all of the selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drugs or antipsychotics? Good information, nutrients. This is a study from a Dr. Sapala, medical doctor, chief of the Department of Psychiatry at the Hospital District of Southern Savo, and it says the following. Following a diet lacking in folate, which is folic acid, and vitamin B12 increases the risk of melancholic depressive symptoms. Now, melancholic depression involves typical depression symptoms such as a blue mood, And non-melancholic depression is characterized by other types of symptoms, such as low self-esteem and feelings of worry and anxiety. Well, quote, the findings have practical implications in the care for patients with depressive symptoms. That's what they say. They looked at 3,000 middle-aged Finnish subjects, and among the group that had the melancholic depression, they were lower on folic acid and B12. This was published in the Journal of Affective Disorders. Now, what does this mean for us? This morning when I went to get my juice before my show, there was a family in the health food store, and the kid was clearly very hyper. I was thinking probably autistic spectrum disorder, somewhere on the scale. And sure enough, the father, when he saw me, came over. So, you know, I'm trying to help my kid, but when I ask about the diet was not a healthy diet, and there were no supplements. And I said, well, you know, folic acid and B12 are two of the single most important nutrients, but they should be in methylated form and sublingual so they get maximum absorption. Also, repairing the gut of people who are hyperactive is very frequently beneficial. Probiotics, and then getting rid of anything that causes inflammation, including soft drinks and coffee, which is highly acidic, and then fried foods. And the father was very, you know, very intent on trying this, which is good, and that at least is the first step. But then think of all the vegans. Think of all the people who are raw foodists. Do they get their B12? If so, from where and what amounts? When was the last time you were tested for B12 levels? Because you start going deficient B12, depression is one of the very first things going to pop up. Blue moods, a sense of foreboding, anxiety, the kind of unsettled, the sense of lack of ease in your stomach, where you have that kind of bad gut feeling. Well, that bad gut feeling may have nothing in the world to do with something bad. It may have to do with your deficient in B12. That's why I advocate that all vegetarians and vegans make sure that you get 500 to 1,000 micrograms of methylated B12 per day and the same amount of folic acid. But if you are depressed, you can go to a higher amount. But that's something that will help you, and there's a study showing it. That's one of the first studies I've seen on that. We want to shut down cancer cells, and there are many different nutrients that will help do that. Indole-3 carbinol from broccoli and broccoli sprouts. Wheatgrass juice will do it. Chlorella will do it. Turmeric and curcumin, the active ingredient in turmeric, will do it. Green tea, red tea, oolong tea will also do it. But new research out of McGill University in Canada shows that vitamin D3, quote, new evidence that vitamin D3 shuts down cancer cells. I'll quote this from May Chan. She says, researchers at McGill University have discovered a molecular basis for the cancer preventative effects of vitamin D3, whereby its active form essentially shuts down cancer cells. People with higher blood levels of vitamin D live significantly longer than people who have low blood levels of vitamin D3. The team led by McGill professors John White and David Goldsman of the Faculty of Medicine Department of Physiology discovered that the active form of vitamin D acts by several mechanisms to inhibit both the production and function of the protein CMYC, and that drives cell division and is active at elevated levels in more than half of all cancers. Their results are published in the latest Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. So this is really good news. Quote, our findings suggest that low levels of vitamin D may be a substantial public health concern for nation's adults, end quote. So it's not difficult to get your vitamin D3. 1,000 to 3,000 units a day by supplementation, or of course, get out in the sun and let that hit your body. The other day, I spoke at length about the bodies being run down. And then we have what is called immuno senescence, where the immune system becomes so exhausted that you end up with senescence or programmed cell death or end of life. I'm seeing something I had not seen in a long time in my daily work. I'm seeing people in their 30s who are having, immune collapse. And then when I take a very detailed history, I see that most of these people had social drinking as a norm, because it's what you do when you go out with people, you drink. A lot of them did drugs. Almost all of them did drugs in college, and that was considered normal. In fact, one person told me this just yesterday. I was talking about, well, this person's mother is a physician, is a psychiatrist, and is not into holistic health at all. And here's what the person said. Why did I take these drugs? Why am I still taking some of these drugs? Because my mother said that I can't compete and stay equal with the other students who are all taking drugs. How would your mother know? Well, she prescribes drugs. For whom? For all these, you know, kids and, you know, in school and college. Why? Well, because it gives them an advantage. It makes them more alert. You are aware of the side effects of these drugs. Your mother must be aware of the side effects of these drugs, and also what it means when we feel that the only way our kid can compete is by taking a psychoactive drug that can imbalance their brain chemistry and have serious adverse effects. And one of the adverse effects of that particular drug is akesthesia, the inability to sit still. And then the guy says, well, but you got to understand, Gary, I don't know when you were in college last or you taught in college last. Well, A, I'm still teaching. But B, he said, it's epidemic and it's considered okay. Just like a lot of the people I knew who worked on Wall Street thought it was normal to go in bathrooms on Wall Street offices and see people taking cocaine because it was that natural high. Well, yes, cocaine comes from a natural source, but it also destroys your brain cells. It adversely affects the hippocampus area of the brain, and a lot of other bad things happen with it, but it's considered that give you the energy to keep you up, to keep you more competitive, to keep you going. And then you look at how late some of these people work at night, and they are back there early in the morning. They think that's the right way of doing it. In any case, what happens is today we're seeing a whole generation with exhausted immune systems, burned out. They also thought it was normal to drink lots of coffee and soft drinks. One person said that this is a 26-year-old guy, he got for his birthday this year an espresso machine. And it was, he said, like $4,000. Wow, that's an expensive way to make coffee. Well, he says, you know, but you make these double espressos and you get these exotic blends. I said, at the end of the day, do you have any idea how much caffeine you're putting in your body with each one of those espressos? He said, I have no idea. All I know is I'm very up, very energized, and I hear it's good for you. I said, no, it's not good for you because it's exhausting your adrenal glands. I said, espresso is as good for you, for your energy, as a laxative is for a person to have a normal bowel movement. Then the day comes when you can only have a bowel movement if you have your laxative. Hence, you become addicted to the artificial mechanisms by which a laxative does the work, and your own peristalsis, the wave-like rhythmic movement of your intestine, no longer does the work for you. So much better to have the body work on your behalf. You have adrenal glands. You have what are called ATP, adenosine triphosphate reactions inside the mitochondria. By feeding the mitochondria, you have all the energy you won't need. Oh, I didn't know that. Well, and then they end up exhausted. They think it's Lyme's disease, but more often than not, it is not. They think it's chronic fatigue syndrome, but they don't see a high viral expression. Therefore, they don't know, is it from Epstein-Barr virus? What's it from? It's from the complete exhaustion of the mitochondria to the point where people in their mid-30s to 40s are having what is called mega-channeling. That's when the mitochondria literally opens up and all of its internal material leaks out and that cell dies because they've had so many highly inflammatory, overstimulating agents in their body for so long that they've reached their immune senescence. Here's the latest on this, and this is from Mainstream Medicine. This is from the Perelman School of Medicine, University of Pennsylvania. It's published in the peer-reviewed journal Science and reported in Medical News. Quote, exhausted T cells can lead to chronic viral infections. When you get an acute infection, such as influenza, the body generally responds with a coordinated response of immune cell proliferation, an attack that rapidly clears the pathogen. Then, their mission done, the immune system stands down, leaving a population of sentinel memory cells to rapidly redeploy the immune system in the event of reinfection. This is why vaccination works, and it's why, in theory at least, people who have had the chickenpox once will never get it again. But what about chronic infection? In the case of such pathogens as hepatitis C and HIV and malaria, the body and the pathogen essentially fight to a prolonged stalemate, neither able to gain an advantage. Over time, however, the cells become exhausted, and the immune system can collapse, giving the pathogen the edge. Now, a new study by researchers at the Perelman School of Medicine, University of Pennsylvania, is showing just how that happens. The findings also suggest a novel therapeutic approach that might be used to shift the balance power. And then it goes on to talk about what they found. And they're looking for, quote, the balance. Well, let me tell you how you get the balance on your side. First, nowhere in that article that I read the whole article does it show that what we eat and what we drink and what we breathe and our level of stress contributes to that chronic imbalance that can exhaust the system. For example, you get someone who's stressed, chronically stressed, watch how many infections they come down with. Sore throat, runny nose, congestion, lung congestion, irritable bowel, all because they were stressed and exhausted their immune system. Now, let a person detoxify, get into a beautiful environment, spend time in nature, and do things that are soothing to the soul and comforting. Then let them clean their system out, juicing and botanicals and homeopathics. And now the balance has swung so that the natural immune system, the humoral immune system, has got the advantage. Therefore, you will still have those pathogens, but they're not active. Unless you get stressed, unless you pig out, unless you overeat, unless you don't get sleep, in which case then you reverse that balance. And now the disease has the upper hand. Almost never, when you're seeing this kind of thing act out, do you see people who are really building their immune system, like taking their probiotics and getting rid of all the junk in their diet and living as much as possible a non-stress life. But then we now know that through the use of intravenous nutrients, we can hyper-stimulate the immune system with pushes of glutathione, aqua vitamin A, intravenous vitamin C, etc. They can literally knock out the viruses completely from the body. Where the person goes to only a marker showing that the virus was once there, but now you're protected. It's no longer actively there. Your core antigens and your immune antigens are now able to be measured in a way that's healthy to you. But at least they're showing that you can end up with an exhausted immune system. If a woman wants to have better cognition, according to the journals of gerontology, on biological sciences, medical sciences, they're showing that vitamin D3, once again this superstar, two separate studies, I'm going to quote from Gerontological Society of America, quote, two new studies appearing in the journals of gerontology show that vitamin D may be a vital component for the cognitive health of women as they age. higher vitamin D intake is associated with a lower risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, according to research conducted by a team led by MD, PhD, Cedric Anweiler at the Angers University Hospital in France. Similarly, investigators led by Yelena Selinin, MD, at the VA Medical Center in Minnesota found that low levels of vitamin D among older women are associated with higher odds of global cognitive impairment and a higher risk of global cognitive decline. So your vitamin D3 can make all the difference in the world. And finally, aloe gel, natural proven way to reduce wrinkles. This is from Elizabeth Renter from Health News. Here's what it says. There are many people who chase the fountain of youth for their entire life. They spend hundreds on creams and solutions that promote or promise to tighten your skin, turn back the clock. And those creams that claim to have natural ingredients are usually chock full of man-made chemicals with unknown effects and temporarily, if any, benefits. But what if there was a way to reduce wrinkles that cost mere pennies a day? Reduce wrinkles with aloe gel. Aloe has been used medicinally for centuries, and one of its many uses is in topical skin care. But as a wrinkle cure, the solution is far more than skin deep. Aloe vera hydrates and rejuvenates, making skin more flexible. According to scientists with the Department of Dermatology at Seoul National University, taking a small amount of aloe vera gel on a daily basis can significantly improve skin quality and reduce wrinkles. Their research took 30 women over the age of 45, giving them one group a small dose of 1,200 milligrams of aloe gel per day, and the other 3,600 milligrams of aloe gel per day. The women's baseline status was used as a control, and their wrinkles and elasticity were measured before and after a 90-day period of supplementation. The results of the researchers weren't only promising, they were remarkable. All of the women experienced a decrease in wrinkles, with the women in the lower dose group also seeing improvement in facial stretchability. All women also saw an increase in collagen production. So that's good. The low dose of 1,200 is equal to 1/4 teaspoon. So a small, healthy aloe plant would keep your skin healthy for more for a little bit of time. Also, by the way, what is should be mentioned, aloe is a natural moisturizer. It's a scar minimizer. It's a burn reliever. Reduces sunburn, by the way. Reduces inflammation, relieves digestive distress, and is a possible heart health and blood pressure benefit. So all that from aloe. I believe people should take about 2 ounces of aloe a day. It's a good time when you take it to take your probiotics and to take glutamine, 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams of glutamine, all of which is a big help for you. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go to Sal in White Plains and see if Sal's got her answer. Hi, Sal, your turn.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air, Sal.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Great. We met once before at one of your events. The question was the largest concentration of plastic?
Yes.
And I would say the oceans. Wouldn't that be the case?
Well, Sal, if you're going to say something like that, if you're going to say an ocean, which ocean?
Oh, I don't know in particular. I thought many oceans probably.
No, we have to have a specific answer, Sal. But thank you for trying. If you would like to answer the question, quote, plastic pollution is the most concentrated in the world in what body of water? Give us a call, 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feel, and I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart, and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Dancing in the rain.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take all the lines are lit up. Let's just go real quick. Maria from Staten Island. Hi, Maria. What's the answer?
Gary, it's Midway in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, close but didn't hit the mark. But thank you. Appreciate it. Tim from New Jersey. Tim, you're on.
That South Pacific, the middle of the South Pacific area where there's accumulation of plastic.
Close but, again, didn't hit it right.
Not exact. Okay.
Yeah, but thank you. I appreciate your call.
Right.
Andre from Queens.
Question.
Yes.
Hello. Yes, I'm calling to answer the question for the largest.
And you're on. You're on the air.
Okay. Yes, Gary. My name is Andre. Is the answer in the Pacific Ocean? There's an area I know of the size of Texas.
See, you're awful close, but not quite. But thank you, Andre. I appreciate calling in. Here is the answer. Well, no, I'm going to keep it going. Just see if someone comes up with the answer. 888-874-4888. Let me give some of the newer information on the environment and why we should all be opposed to hydrofracking. Now, I believe that New York State, based upon the information I'm getting, will allow some hydrofracking in New York, and that will be unfortunate, because that will have a substantial impact upon people whose land it's on, plus the possibility of contaminating the air and the water around it. This is from Allison Rose Levy. I will post it on her website. Quote, the top fracking threats to health New York must assess. And it says the following. One, radioactive wastewater. The higher levels of radioactive materials released through drilling from Marcellus Shale, exceeding EPA's maximum contaminant safety level by 1,000-fold. Due to infrequent testing, it's unlikely that radioactivity in public water would be detected prior to mass consumption, with exposure resulting in anemia, cataracts, cancer, and increased death, according to a CZC toxicological profile report. Also, two, radon. With radon exposure, the second leading cause of lung cancer in the United States, the radon present in the shale will readily mix with the gas and travel via pipeline into the homes and businesses of its end users. Number three, smog. Exhaust from trucks and industrial equipment increases smog in both rural locations and travels downstate to impair air quality in regional urban environments. Four, chemical contamination of drinking water. Over time, most well casings fail. When fracking fluids seep from them to connect with underground fissures, previously abandoned wells, and natural faults and fractures, the contaminants and methane can readily migrate over long distances into underground waterways and fresh drinking water sources. Now, five main systemic obstacles, systematic obstacles. One, long latency of many illnesses. This is very important. A higher incidence of asthma, cancer, heart disease, and the effects of endocrine disruption on developing fetuses and children due to contaminant exposure only became evident over time. To prevent disease rather than incur its high human and economic cost, it's best to intervene prior to exposure rather than act in hindsight. Two, the lack of medical know-how. Conventional medicine does not recognize, no less treat, symptoms and illnesses resulting from increasing toxic chemical exposures. Treatment of cancer and radiation-related conditions is a medical specialty. Three, conflicts of interest affecting scientific findings. According to studies cited in 2012 at a meeting before the state committee, industry-funded studies can result in findings that, quote, benefit sponsors and are poorly designed and withhold negative data from publication, end quote. Four, the lack of accurate health data gathering. Quote, A pall of ignorance hangs over fracking, says biologist Sandra Steingraber. Emissions data, monitoring data, exposure data, these are the things you need in order to judge health effects. And where are they? They are largely absent due to the state governments, which, like Pennsylvania, welcome fracking, but often fail to ascertain what happens to public health afterwards. For example, the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection neither adequately monitors nor collects health data. According to many PA citizen group, it is singularly unresponsive to citizens' reports, which are neither noted nor investigated until they have been personally reviewed by the governor, who understandably is too busy to get to them. When local water supplies became contaminated in the aftermath of fracking, many citizens are forced then to sign non-disclosure agreements in order to receive trucked-in water from the gas companies. Finally, as health problems in Pennsylvania communities have emerged, the Pennsylvania legislature attempted, so far unsuccessfully, to instate Act 13, an ALEC model bill that actually prohibits physicians from disclosing to patients and communities when fracking chemical companies appear in people's bloodstreams. Unless overcome, ultimately, all the above could result in a higher incidence of disease. And finally, increased health care cost. Increased costs can be projected for New York based on increased costs incurred in other states. And from the health professionals' website, quote, costs related to acute effects of hydrofracking operations include doctor visits, laboratory tests, medications, emergency room visits, and hospitalizations due to acute medical disorders, acute exacerbations of existing chronic diseases, asthma, chronic obstructive lung disease, congestive heart disease, exposure to radioactive materials, ingestion of contaminated water, inhalation of contaminated air, traffic accidents involving heavy-duty trucks, and trauma from on-site accidents. And unfortunately, right now, it doesn't look like New York is going to step and say no, so we, the people, have to know this. And finally, on the environmental segment, before I go to the my last report on this, Mark from New York. Hi, Mark.
Hi. My guess is that it would be the Atlantic off the coast of New York City.
Oh, close, Mark. Thank you. Not right. Flory from Miami.
Hi, Gary. Yeah, I believe it's the North Pacific Ocean called the Great North Pacific.
No, but thank you for trying, Flory. This is from Ricky Ott, from rickyott.com, published by Common Dreams. Good site, by the way. I'll quote this. It's long, but I'll only give you about a page of it. You'll get the idea. All six of Julie Kreppel's young children are sick, vomiting, blisters all over their bodies, even in their throats, boils, severe headaches that wake them up screaming at night, nausea, fevers, diarrhea, stomach spasms that contort their bodies in pain, skin lesions, psoriasis, nosebleeds that gush unexpectedly, respiratory infections, dizziness, sinus infections, hand, foot, and mouth disease, hair loss, and more. The Kreppels live in Boothville, Louisiana, in a southern parish. An area health clinics and hospitals are experiencing an influx of sick children for treatment for a range of symptoms that began after the British Petroleum oil disaster. The increase in numbers of sick children coincides with the massive spraying of toxic chemical dispersants into the water and air that began in 2010. More troubling is the fact that the children are still having these symptoms to this day. The Corexit dispersants used in the Gulf are known human health hazards, causing eye and skin irritation, respiratory problems, harm to the liver, kidneys, and blood cells, injury and even death to unborn babies, immune suppression, skin disorders, and more. Not surprisingly, the symptoms Julie's children suffer are epidemic across the Gulf states that were impacted by the British Petroleum disaster and the secondary disaster, the widespread use of Nalco's Corex dispersants. Most medical doctors in the Gulf have continuously treated the sick with standard drugs used for infections and viruses. Some of these are potent drugs that children should not be taking for long periods of time because of their side effects, including, ironically, many of the very symptoms being treated. They are taking the drugs for months and now even years because the children and adults are not getting better. So the medical doctors prescribe more drugs, but the persistence of the symptoms belies the diagnosis. It should be clear to the medical community by now that they are misdiagnosing the illness and mistreating the patient. I believe the children are suffering from chemical illness, not from biological agents. This should have been clear back in 2010 after the first 6 to 8 rounds of antibiotics and medications prescribed for babies, elders, coastal residents, visitors, and spoiled responders did not clear up their symptoms. It should have been clear 2 years after the disaster, in March 2012, when British Petroleum completely reversed its position of denial of any harm to human health from oil dispersants exposure and listed pages of same symptoms and illnesses that people have been reporting for 2 years as now covered by British Petroleum medical benefits settlement, so-called, I can only suppose, because it mostly benefits British Petroleum. The problem is the illness, like British Petroleum oil, just doesn't go away because it's an inconvenience for oil companies and the federal government in charge of an impossible situation. There is no way to clean up the oil spills, including tar sand spills, but there are many ways to lessen the impacts to workers and the public, none of which have been done to date in the Gulf. Now, here are my thoughts on this. For those of you who are listening right now in the Gulf area, and we have many listeners, I would like for you to try something. If you're able to get a group of people together who all suffer from the symptoms I've been mentioning, I am willing, on my dime and my time, meaning no cost to you, to fly in there and set up a chemical sensitivity health support group, meaning help you detoxify your body from the chemicals, the dispersants that have caused all these symptoms, and rebuild your natural immunity in order to helpfully get your health back. If you are living in the area, or you're someone who knows people are suffering, you can contact my office in New York. And my office number is 646-926-5422, and just leave all pertinent information. If we can get a group, you know, maybe 30, 40 people, and since there's probably 1 million people suffering different conditions, though not always acute, I'm happy to come down and help you out. All right? And we'll photograph it. We'll film it. Because then, if we can show over a 6-month period you regaining your health or making substantial improvements using lifestyle and behavior modification and complementary medicine, there's some holistic doctors in the area that I'll bring in to be a part of this, then we could use this as an example of what could be done to help people all over the world, in China, in Brazil, in India, and all around the United States suffering from environmental illnesses. I work with environmental toxic people all the time, so it's something I'm familiar with. So that's just my ability, my will to help you. You have to get back to me now, okay? I'm Gary Nall. Now a commentary that is a follow-up to yesterday's program. Then I'm going to open up our lines for a talkback. This is from John Rappaport. And John is concerned about Obama's support of genetically modified food. Now, yesterday on this program, I had Dr. Vandana Shiva, nuclear physicist and one of the leading environmentalist experts in the world. And I read a letter that I had written to Dr. Oz and sent to him. And it did not attack him. If you read the letter, you'll see that. But rather, it drew into question, why make statements that he is supporting genetically engineered food and meat and chicken and fish and all the other vegetables, and then at the same time attacking as elitist of the idea that you'd want to eat organic. In point of fact, historically, the poorest people in the world are the ones who've eaten organic. So if he got out of the studio and got away from the 1% that he's embedded with and took a trip with his wife, who is one of the most conscientious, environmentally aware people I know, She actually narrated Jeffrey Smith's documentary, which clearly he didn't take the time to look at and have a conversation with her, because they are diametrically opposite on this particular issue. Which is fine. I mean, we can certainly be opposite people on one issue and with him on other issues. And it's not to suggest that everything he says is out of balance to what we now can prove. But I wanted to show that there are hundreds of studies on what happens when we go the way of genetic and commercial farming. The abuse of animals in factory farming. The massive overuse of antibiotics in fish ponds like tilapia. Do you know that most of your tilapia is coming from China? And they don't have sanitation use there. They use actual human manure in the pools. And look at all the food poisoning that happens. Hundreds of, tens of millions of examples of food poisoning every year in the United States. Plus, look at all the poor working conditions. Look at the indentured, almost slave labor for the last 50 years of farmers. But look at their legs. I've gone out the San Joaquin Valley. I've gone up to Goshen, to the celery fields and the onion fields. I've been there. I've looked at their legs, massive lesions from the pesticides they use. And their babies are born sick. They have highest incidence of stillbirth, miscarriages. That comes with it, Dr. Hawes. But also coming with that is all the diseases that come when you eat the average American diet. And much of what you advocate is the American diet. I watched an episode where you had these cardiologists on, not the cardiologists I would have recommended, but these are not holistic cardiologists. And if you want to talk about surgery, why don't you read the work of the most important voice of a surgeon in recent history, Dr. Joseph Issels. He was a holistic surgeon. And look at the thousands and tens of thousands of people he cured of disease using the right diet, not the kind of pizza, fast food, junk food diet that I've seen advocated. But in any case, when you say that we should be going away from organic, are we to say that pesticides are all right, herbicides, fungicides? Have you actually seen the French study that was 2 years in the making that showed the renal carcinomas and breast tumors, the mammary tumors, that were as large as the mice? I have. So maybe it's just a lack of being fully informed. And let us hope that you can walk these things back, but you said it in Time magazine. And I would have to think, with the resources you have at hand, that we don't know the full motivation of what prompted the statements that were attacking organic and supporting genetically modified and commercial farming of animals and food. But that's your right. And why don't you take a moment, please, Dr. Oz, and look in the mirror. At what point do you have enough money and fame you can be completely honest and not compromise on any principle ever? I can't know what's going on in your mind, and I won't ascribe any motivation. I'm merely asking you, with all the resources at your hands, with the tens of millions of dollars and money that you earn, clearly you could look at all the scientific evidence from the peer-reviewed literature and see that virtually all of your positions that you've taken on this issue are untenable. And it also is a real bad shout-out to everyone who goes out of the way to buy organic. Dr. Oz, I shop at a little tiny health food store on the Upper West Side. Probably 50% of the people who come there are poor, financially challenged. They're given breaks as our senior citizens. They're there, sometimes making long journeys because they know what's wrong with factory farming. They come from a higher consciousness. They come from a desire to want to be healthy. And if it means traveling an hour extra on a subway to get there, they'll do it. How are they elite? How are they snooty? How? I see them coming from humility. I see them coming from true commitment to a higher ideal of what they're giving their children or themselves or their loved ones. This is from John Rappaport. is Michelle Obama's natural food campaign designed to hide the White House's attack on organic foods. I'll quote this because it falls in line with our whole effort right now to educate people about the dangers of Monsanto, support of genetically engineered food. I'll quote him exactly. How does this assault on organic food go? Soon after her husband's inauguration, Michelle Obama announced her First Lady Do Good Project to the press and the public. Every First Lady picks one. It's mandatory. Better education, some charity, a worthy cause. It's designed public relations, aimed at creating goodwill for the husband sitting in the Oval Office. That's the First Lady's job. She's a PR agent. Michelle chose an organic vegetable garden and the health of children. More than her work with military families or her personal fashion style interest, the organic garden and the beehives she installed on the South Lawn of the White House became her signature. The White House vegetable garden was the first planted on the grounds since Eleanor Roosevelt. As the press trumpeted, Michelle instructed the White House kitchen to order organic food for meals. We were told produce and honey from the South Lawn garden were served up for the first family and even at state dinners. The title of Michelle Obama's book, American Grown, The Story of the White House Kitchen Garden and Gardens Across America, she has tied the issue of childhood obesity, deteriorating eating habits, and unhealthy food. All in all, her presentation has been quite effective and convincing. She's done a first-rate job. The all-important impression is unmistakable. The White House stands behind healthy eating. But, meanwhile, her husband is the most powerful enabler of Monsanto in America. Despite his hints that he would support labeling of GMO food, Barack Obama has done Herculean work to destroy true natural food. The details are undeniable. They include his mind-boggling political appointments of Monsanto operatives to key government posts and a parade of new GMO crops into the food supply during his first presidential term. Monsanto and their allies could have wished for a better partner. No, they got the ultimate partner. The president has given them everything they ask for. The new president filled key posts with Monsanto people in federal agencies that wield tremendous force in food issues, the USDA and the FDA. Example, at the USDA is the director of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, Robert Beachy, former director of Monsanto's Danforth Center. As deputy commissioner of the FDA, the new food safety issue czar, the infamous Michael Taylor, former vice president for public policy at Monsanto. Taylor has been instrumental in getting approval of Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone that's in your milk. As commissioner of the USDA, Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack. Vilsack had set up a national group, the Governor's Biotechnology Partnership, and had been given a Governor of the Year award by the biotech industry, whose membership include Monsanto, as the new agricultural trade representative who would push GMO foods for export. Islam Sadaki, a former Monsanto lobbyist, as the new counsel of the USDA, Ramona Romero, who had been corporate counsel for another biotech company giant, DuPont, as the new head of the USAID, Rajiv Shah, who had previously worked in key positions for Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, a major funder of GMO agriculture research. We should also remember that Obama's Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, once worked at the Rose Law Firm, and she counseled Monsanto. Obama nominated Kagan to the U.S. Supreme Court. Kagan, as federal solicitor general, had previously argued for and on behalf of Monsanto in Monsanto versus Gersten seed case before the Supreme Court. Let's be honest, the deck was stacked. Obama didn't simply have a modest mistake. Obama hadn't just failed to exercise proper oversight and selected appointees. He wasn't just experiencing a failure of short-term memory. He was staking our territory on behalf of Monsanto and other GMO corporate giants. And now let us look at what key Obama appointees have brought for their bosses. GMO crops have walked through the open door of the Obama presidency. Monsanto GMO alfalfa, Monsanto GMO sugar beets, Monsanto GMO TBT soybeans, coming soon, Monsanto GMO sweet corn, Syngenta's GMO corn for ethanol, Syngenta GMO stack corn, Pioneer GMO soybean, Syngenta GMO BT cotton, Bayer GMO cotton, a GMO papaya strain, and also soon genetically engineered salmon and apples. This is an extraordinary parade. It is, in fact, what makes Obama the most GMO-dedicated politician in American history. You don't attain that position through errors or oversights. Obama was, all along, a stealth operative on behalf of Monsanto, biotech, GMOs, and corporate control of the future of agriculture. From this perspective, Michelle Obama's campaign for gardens and clean, organic, nutritious food is nothing more than a diversion, a cover story, floated to obscure what her husband has actually been doing. Nor is it coincidental that two of the Obama's biggest supporters, Bill Gates and George Soros, purchased 900,000 and 500,000 shares of Monsanto. Now in 2012, we are seeing, as Mike Adams reveals, a new attack on organic food. Organic is an elite fetish, a nonsensical preoccupation of the 1%, as against the 99%. We are told that conventional grown, pesticide-laden, genetically engineered food is just as good, is no problem, and patriotic Americans should be loyal to it. In other words, we should be loyal to the corporate giants who are taking over the food supply and are exercising patent rights on food ownership and are doing whatever they can to squeeze small farmers out of business and are giving us nutritionally deficient food, are lying through their teeth about heavy health risks of eating genetically modified food. We should be loyal to the police who are ordering homeowners to rip out their vegetable gardens on their lawns. Yes, this is a coordinated attack on clean, nutritious, unpoisoned food, and it reaches all the way up to the White House. There's a quick detour around Michelle Obama's smokescreen operation and arrives in the Oval Office at the desk of Barack Obama. Why isn't Obama out there on the White House lawn picking a few delicious organic vegetables in the garden? Why isn't he posing in front of 100 media cameras taking a bite out of an organic non-GMO tomato? Why isn't he leading the way on a campaign to have people in inner cities plant more community organic gardens to fend off hunger, ill health, and poverty? Why isn't he? Because he's working for Monsanto. Monsanto, the same company, by the way, who took the advice of Mitt Romney many years ago to stop overtly promoting chemical pesticides, instead get into genetic. End quote, John Rappaport. Now time for your talkback, 888-874-4888. Let me just mention for all of our listeners and all the stations, we end our show officially in 55 minutes after the hour, but we continue on over the Internet. If you would like to hear that additional conversation and calls, you can call on the telephone and just listen anywhere in North America, Canada, over your phone to any show I do. Noon to one every day of the week, I'm on the air broadcasting. Tonight, midnight to 6 a.m. in California on KPFK. Sunday nights and Monday nights also. The number to call to listen is 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066, or you can go to progressiveradionetwork.com, and that way you'll stay connected. Now, for those people who are financially challenged, and there are many, who could not attend the New York premiere because we've been sold out, we're out of seats, but I always reserve, in any venue I do, seats for people who are financially challenged. You can call 646-926-5422. I've made a special situation for you, and you're going to get the book, and you're going to get the DVD. 646-926-5422. And those of you who are out on Long Island, I'm looking forward to being there this Sunday at 2 p.m. at Long Island Cinema Arts Center on Park Avenue. And if you're a BAI member, you get a special discount. Call 1-800-838-3006, 1-800-838-3006. By the way, I've gotten a lot of good mail from the people who attended the PFW lecture and screenings, four lectures and screenings from a month ago. By the way, thank you all for coming, for supporting PFW. Great voice, great station that it is, serving so many people's needs and rebuilding. New manager, John Hughes, new program director, Tiffany Jordan, they're all doing a really good job on your behalf. So I'm there to support them, and hopefully you'll be there to support them also. John from Staten Island. John, you're the last person I'm going to let answer the question.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is about laminine. It's a product from fertilized eggs. Norwegian eggs that were fertilized, and they had lecithin to it. It was originally developed, I think, in the 40s by a Canadian physician.
Well, John, hold on one second, because before we go off the regular program, quote, plastic pollution in Great Lakes most concentrated in the world, from Great Lakes Echo, quote, plastic pollutants circulate in pockets in the Great Lakes at concentrations higher than any other body of water on Earth, according to recent State University of New York study. The study is the first to look at plastic pollutants in the Great Lakes. It's part of a larger global endeavor to understand the origin and prevalence of plastic pollution in water and was conducted by the Los Angeles-based Five Greers Institute. Quote, we had samples in Lake Erie, and we just kept going back and rechecking this data because the count, the number of plastic particles in the sample, was 300% greater than any sample collected anywhere in the entire world. End quote. Who would have thought, right? I'm Gary Knoll. Now, John, your turn. What is your question, please?
Yes, Gary. There's a product called laminine.
Yeah, no, I know that. What is your question?
Oh, my question is, they say that it's very good for the immune system, for energy, for depression, and I was wondering if you agree with them or not.
I have not seen evidence that would show me that I should agree with that. Sorry. I'll take the rest of your calls now. Our number, 888-874-4888. Let's go in studio where Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Why, anyone who didn't get pissed off after that last piece got to be brain dead. And you don't hear this information anywhere else. I continue to get lots of wonderful emails from your audience. We have something here from Sarah. She says her brother has multiple sclerosis, and he's only 29. And she said, I know you've helped people with MS. Can you give me some highlights of the protocol?
Sure. The first thing with anyone with multiple sclerosis is you have to put them on an environmental cleansing protocol, because I don't find that there's any one element that's causing it to demyelinate the sheath in the central nervous system. Instead, I find that it generally has environmental exposure to heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury, aluminum, over a period of time. For example, I found someone who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, who had had it for 9 years, whose father was a leading physician. And when the father came to see me with his daughter, and his wife had colitis, and he had arthritis, and I asked a simple question. Have you ever looked in your mouth? Why? He said, because of mercury. What does that have to do? Because 52% of amalgam filling is mercury. And every time you chew, the mercury's leaf releases a vapor and goes into the brain, and that causes damage, but it can also go into the bloodstream and affect your central nervous system. Well, he didn't believe it. I said, well, okay, what about common allergens? We don't have any allergens except, you know, to molds. I said, well, I'll tell you what. If I give you a protocol, will you follow for just 5 days? He said, fine. So I gave them a meat-free, wheat-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, caffeine-free, alcohol-free diet, no preservatives, no additives, for 5 days. And he said that that night he was in such pain that that he couldn't sleep. And for 2 days, the pain, his wrists were swollen. But then the pain subsided, and by the seventh day, he had no pain. Most importantly, the weakness in the muscles began to change in his daughter, and his wife's colitis began to clear up. I then asked them to get rid of all the mercury in their mouth and to go on this diet. He ended up reversing his arthritis. She reversed her colitis. And that woman, many of you might have remembered this, because it was a packed auditorium. I brought Dr. Joseph Vissels, Emmanuel Ravisi, Stanislaw Brzezinski, Virginia Livingston Wheeler, Dr. Kelly, Dr. Al-Qaeda, all the top, Dr. Lawrence Burton. Everyone who was important in the alternative world of cancer who had shown good results were invited to New York to make a presentation. It was an all-day event. It was packed. About 2,500 people showed throughout the day. Well, during that afternoon, a woman held up her hand when I, in between guests, speakers, and I asked, she was sitting in the front row. She says, can I come up on stage for a moment? And if you remember, those of you who were there, she walked up on stage and she said that this is the first time she'd been able to walk without her walking aid. And she had advanced multiple sclerosis. She was getting her muscles back into shape. And she told her story to the people. Now, again, that's one person, but I've helped a lot of people like that. So the idea is get rid of all metals and chelate, chelation therapy, oral and rectal chelation, intravenous chelation. All should be done simultaneously with the specialist who's board certified in chelation therapy, because you have to measure all minerals, not just toxic minerals. So you rebalance what you're taking out of the body, like calcium and magnesium, when you chelate and put them back in. That is the first stage, okay? And I'm looking at the clock, Luann. We're out of time.
Okay.
Good, thank you. Luann, for people who would like to write you to ask questions or reach out, how can they do that?
Surely they can email me at whnn@aol.com. That's whnn@aol.com. Or they can contact me at 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198.
Also, I saw a little clip from one of these late-night talk shows. I don't watch them. A comedian interviewing some rock singer from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
He was talking about ozone and how it benefited him. And he didn't do a bad job of explaining it. You know, for a layperson.
He did a rock singer's job.
Yeah. But next time up, let's discuss the truth about ozone, what it will and will not do. Because, as you know, it does a lot of good, but a lot of people are getting sucked into signing long-term contracts. They're never given viral load tests. They're never measured to see are they benefiting. So they're clearly just making money for people. And I don't like to see people exploited. I want to see people benefit from a therapy. We'll talk about that. Now let's say hello to Utrece Leet, who's on hold. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. Hello.
And what's up on your end, Utrece?
Well, we'll talk about what's not happening with the budget, and that is the covert plan with this budget, and we'll talk about what's going on in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Okay. Sounds good. We'll be listening. Utrece Leet, coming up next on the Progressive Radio Network.
Everything that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh. You can make them cry. Anything, anything can go. A clown with his pants falling down.